I'm Ying Ying Fry, and right now I'm 11 years old, and I live in San Francisco, and I'm Chinese American, and I like to play soccer and run track. And I have two cats, one's Mao and one's Smudge.
Is everything okay? Should I just keep going?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So you go to, which school do you go to?
I go to Chinese American International School. It's at 150 Oak Street in San Francisco.
What do you learn there?
Well, in English social studies, we learn about all kinds of different cultures and histories and stuff. And English language arts, we learn about run-on sentences, reading comprehension, and that. I'm writing poems sometimes and taking our midterm in every subject. And in math, we're doing equations right now. And in Chinese language arts, we learn, well, we mostly do reading and stuff, but we have a speech contest coming up and we have to write our speech. And in Chinese social studies, we learn about the terrain in China, and in 8th grade we're gonna learn about the, I think it's the Tang Dynasty, but I'm not sure yet.
Wow, you're learning lots of things. So you speak Chinese, you're learning Chinese, right?
Yeah, I learned it since I was 3 or earlier, I think.
So can you introduce yourself in Chinese?
我的名字叫傅英，今年11岁。在中美国际学校读书，我有两只猫，一只叫 Smudge，一只叫猫。我有很多兴趣，我最喜欢的兴趣是踢足球、读书和跑步。
Wow, so what did you say? I have no
哼
idea.
It's the same
Same thing?
thing.
Wow.
It's Smudge, I heard
I'm sorry?
that. I heard the cats.
Oh, good. You know Chinese too. Oh, great. I'm very proud of you. That's great. So let's talk about your birth family. So, do you know who they are?
I don't know because I was a baby and I don't remember anything. So I don't really know.
And I heard you tried to find them, right? What happened?
I don't know if I tried to find them, but if I did, I think I went to the police station and asked them, but or I looked at oh or I looked at my file, but there wasn't a note, so I'm not sure.
You went to police station in China, or
I think so, but I'm not sure.
with your adoptive parents. We'll go back to that story, but I do okay. So tell me what you remember. First memory, when do you remember when that where were you born? First
Oh, I was born, well, in Changsha, in Hunan, that's a province, and I don't know what time, and I don't know exactly what day they estimated the day, and I don't know what hour, minute, and I'm not quite sure.
And do you know how you met your adoptive parents?
Well, I saw pictures, and they came to pick me up, and I never cried, and we went back on the plane together.
So where did you meet your adoptive
Oh, at the
parents?
orphanage when I was a baby.
You can ask. You can go ahead
Oh,
and keep
okay.
asking.
So tell me about your parents.
My mom's name is Amy Tlatskin. My dad's is Terry Michael Fry. And they do My mom's an editor, and she goes to USF right now because she wants to be, I think, a therapist. And my dad, he does something with a company called Negsant, and he goes to work every day. And well, my mom picks me up and stuff.
Great. So I think you visited China with your parents. How many times?
Counting the time I was born, I think, I'm not quite sure, but I think it was 9. Yeah.
You've been to China 9 times?
I think so.
Okay. Well, also, can you say something? Could you make like a full sentences? Like, okay. Instead of just okay. 9 times, because they are not going to use my voice, so it's only okay. Your voice. Great, thanks. So, you've been to China 9 times, and so what did you do? Why did you go there?
Well, the first time I went, I think it was just to see. And, when my friend went to her orphanage, that's when I really wanted to go to mine because I thought it wasn't fair that she got to go to hers. And that's when I decided I wanted to go back and visit my orphanage. And then I also went back with some other friends just recently, last April. 2004, and we visited Beijing and a lot of other places, but I've been to Jiangxi, Shanghai, Changsha, Xi'an, and Hong Kong, and I think my favorite is Changsha and Hong Kong. Changsha because I was born there, and then Hong Kong because it's just really modern and it's fun.
So you said you tried to find your both the parents, right? With your adoptive parents, you went to a police station. And tell me a little bit about that.
I don't really remember right now, but I think we went to see if there was a note, but there wasn't a note, and so we went back to the hotel.
Okay, so... Let me see. I think we had like adoptee meeting, right? You remember? And then a lot of people say, you know, people stare at you in public. Do you experience things like that when you're with your parents?
What do I do?
When you're with other people, do people stare at you?
Oh,
like that?
Not in China, because when I'm in China, they're like, oh, this is a mom and a dad, and here's a kid. And they look the strong bond that we already have, but just recently I went to Monterey for the weekend, and a lady said, that girl is ahead of me. And my mom was pointing at the checkout, and then my mom said, she's with me. And then it was sort of funny, and the lady looked a little embarrassed. But that's the only time I remember.
So in China, people do not stare at you and your parents? You
know? Well, they stare more at my parents. If I walk ahead, they can't really recognize me to be with them. But if I stay with them, they'd only stare at my parents, not really at me.
How do you feel? Do you feel uncomfortable, or are you okay with that?
I've gotten used to it, so it doesn't really matter.
What about here in America?
I don't think anybody stares in San Francisco because it's really mixed in San Francisco, and it's usual to see stuff like that.
That's great. Do you have lots of people who are also young adoptees?
At school, I have about 3 friends that are adoptees, and outside of school, I have a lot of friends that are also adoptees, and they're like my normal friends, and they are my normal friends.
So could you read me some parts from your book. Tell me about, actually, let's talk about your book. When did you publish it and why did you publish it? What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is called Kids Like Me in China, and I published it because they wanted to make a movie, but my mom couldn't do that, so so I had the idea of a book, and she said, okay, and since she was an editor, it'd be sort of easier than it would have been, and it published around when I was 8, I think, and I started writing when I was 7. That's when I went back, and that's pretty much it.
So could you read some parts for me?
Okay. Well, right now I'm 11, and when I wrote it, I was 8. Hi, my name is Yingying. I am 8 years old, and I live in San Francisco. Like lots of kids in my city, I'm Chinese-American, but I wasn't born that way. When I was really small, I was just Chinese. Then my American parents came and adopted me, and that's how I got the American part.
Thank you. There's a poem you wrote, right?
Uh-huh. Here's the Chinese version. 我喜欢中国，希望可以再去中国，想去长城走很久，再去孤儿院看小朋友，可以去武汉看长江，可以去长沙看露西，可以去北京看天安门. Here's the English version. I like China. I hope I can go back to China. I'd like to go to the Great Wall and walk a long time. Go back to my orphanage and see the little kids. I could go to Wuhan and see the Yangtze River. I could go to Changsha and see my friend Lucy. I could go to Beijing and see Tiananmen.
Oh, thank you so much. That was great.
Could you read it one more time in English?
Okay. I hope I can go back to China. I'd like to go to the Great Wall and walk a long time. Go back to my orphanage and see the little kids. I could go to Wuhan and see the Yangtze River. I could go to Changsha and see my friend Lucy. I could go to Beijing and see Tiananmen.
Let's talk about you said you. I think when you introduced yourself, you said you are Chinese American.
Mm-hmm.
So, what you mean by that?
Being Chinese American means not being only one, not just being American and not just being Chinese, because it's important to have both. And I've seen a movie by Diane Boucher-Lim, and she's his first person plural. That's the movie. And she thinks that she can't be both, but then she realizes she can. And there's nothing wrong with it. And it's better that way.
Great, great. Is there any reason you are learning Chinese?
Just so I can go back to China and actually communicate. And not to feel... Because my mom knows all these adoptees and saying the Korean adoptees, and they were wishing they learned Korean when they were younger. And she said it'd be good for me because the Korean adoptees couldn't communicate when they went back and they really wanted to say something. And it would be so much better if I learned it at a young age. When I get older, I wouldn't forget it if I kept on doing it and be better, and I could communicate without a tour guide or something.
Yeah, do you have perfect bilingual, right? You don't need an interpreter, do you?
No.
Wow. Let me see. So what kind of activity do you like to do?
Well, on the weekends, I normally do soccer and running. But on the weekdays, on Monday, I do soccer. On Tuesdays, I do running. On Wednesdays, I do soccer. On Thursdays, I do running. On Friday, I sometimes do Girl Scouts because we only have one meeting every month at someone's house. And that's basically it, except for reading on the weekends and sometimes going to the park and playing soccer or this tennis game, Doink It. But it's sort of broke, so we're starting, so we can't really play it anymore.
And what kind of activity do you do with your parents?
We don't really do much together because we don't have the time. The only time we really do things as a family is dinner, but that's it.
Do you celebrate like a Chinese festival? Did you celebrate Chinese New Year?
We celebrate Chinese New Year and Hanukkah and Christmas and Halloween and my birthday and my half birthday and regular New Year, and we're gonna be in the parade, and we do it every year, and it's always fun.
Great. So do you talk to with the other adult adoptees, like Korean adoptees, and do you learn from them? Do they help you?
The only time is probably Play Shop. Besides, Kyung-ae, sometimes we see her, but not very often because we haven't seen her for a while. But when we used to see her, my friends Hannah and Brianna would also come, and we'd do fun stuff together, like going to the park, because after Play Shop, when she used to be a mentor, we would play tag on the Chinatown playground, but we used to see her more often with Hannah and Brianna, but then she sort of stopped seeing her.
Do you like to talk to them or hang out with them?
Is it fun? It's fun, just like any other people.
Great.
Do you think there's anything special that maybe holds you guys together because you're adoptees?
It's just regular friendship, I think.
So, do you think you're adopted, right? Do you think that affects your life?
Sometimes it does, like when we do in school, when we do family trees in computer class, or when we do early immigrant history or something. You have to interview family member how they got here and how they had you. But otherwise, I don't think it's made much of a difference.
That's great. That's great. So, is everything good and you're happy? And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
can tell us what you're
about, sorry. Yeah. Missed it. Is there anything that you want to talk to other people? Or
No, not really.
Okay. Let me see. Is there anything you would like to
You wrote the book 3 years ago. Now, what have you seen any sort of feedback or effect that the book has had from other people that have read it?
Well, the money that comes from the book goes to the kids paying to the school, and the first boy got into college, and well,
this is at the orphanage?
Yeah, and then I noticed that none of the orphanage kids had lasses, which was really unusual to me because a lot of older kids have lasses now, and we tested them, and like 3 people got lasses that needed them. And there's an air conditioner in where they do homework if it's hot. And there's a lamp, I think. But yeah, that's what the book does. And then the rest goes into my college fund.
How does that feel? Because that's something that not every, you know, 8-year-old or 11-year-old is certainly doing for others and whatnot. Does it change the way you look at the world or think about the world, because you're kind of connected to a place that's pretty far away in many ways?
Doesn't really change, but I don't really think about it that much because I have other things to worry about.
Is it continuing to bring in
not the cat? Okay, let me close the door.
I wonder what noise was. Sorry, cat.
Very curious cat.
Wait a few more minutes.
Have the cat reached the knob?
No.
Did you ask a question or was it the old dog?
No, that was that.
Okay. Well, did you talk about the when you visited your orphanage? Did I ask about that? Shall we talk about that if I didn't?
No.
How did you feel?
Oh.
How did you feel?
Sometimes I just didn't want to go, but other times I wanted to play with the babies and get to know the older kids and play games with them, because you can't really play games that you do with the older kids with the babies. And while I'm there, I normally play with the babies, and then I go see the older kids, and then I go back to the hotel and go swimming. But that's all I do there. And sometimes with the babies, I once helped change one, I think. But that was it.
And also, you met the person who took care of you, right? What was it like to meet her?
The first time, when my mom just came, she recognized my mom and said, you're the mom that adopted so-and-so. And she came up and recognized her, and my mom didn't know exactly how, but my mom recognized her too. And when I came, we had pictures of another girl that looked like me, and we showed them to her, and she said, oh, this is Ying Ying. And then, because we showed her pictures of the girl that looked like me, and she said, oh, these are Ying Ying, where's the other girl? And then we went back to the pictures, and we showed her the picture that was the other girl, and she was like, that can't be the other girl, that's Ying Ying. And, we went to her house once, and she gave me a silk pink scarf that's really small, but we still have it and we keep it. And we went to dinner with her and her family, and we went to the park together, Blue Bubbles, and I think that's all we did with her.
We're going to ask a question. So now you find, like in your book, you said the forever family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you wish that to other children there in China too, the orphanage?
What do you mean?
I think you mentioned in your book, it's like, I hope they will find the forever.
Oh, family. I get it. If they want the forever family, because two of them are going to move to the U.S. and like, one is, I think, 11 or 12, and the other's about 12 or 13 or 11, I'm not quite sure. But they're going to move to the U.S., and once they're over the age of 10, I think, they get to decide whether they want to move or not. And they chose to move, so they moved, but only if the kids want to go, I think they should go. Otherwise, they should stay where they are.
So what do you mean by forever family?
Forever family is like a family that takes care of you and cares about you for the rest of your life. Not your parents that gave birth to you, but the people that actually take care of you and make a home for you and stuff and feed you. But that's what forever family means.
Great. So let me see. I think I was asked all the questions. Are you going to try to search for your birth family again, or?
I don't want to do it right now because just one more thing to worry about, and I think I'll do it later when I'm about maybe in high school or something, when we have the time to go and look, actually spend the whole time that we're there searching. But I think it'll get sort of boring, and you'll sort of get, because I think it's really unlikely that I'll find them, because they might have died, or they might have gone away to a different province. And so it'd be really hard in China's most populated country. And so anything could happen to them, and I'm not quite sure whether I want to do it or I don't.
So tell me how you think your birth parents and forever family, forever parents, adoptive parents. It's a very hard question.
How they're alike?
No, how you think. How do you think about two parents?
Well, I think they're the same because they both cared about me, but except for one couldn't take care of me and the other could, but they both loved me.
Who are they?
Oh, both of my families. And,
I mean, you're talking about birth parents and adoptive parents? Could you just make a sentence like that?
Okay. And my birth parents and my adopted parents both cared about me, and they both loved me, but one of the sets of parents couldn't take care of me, the other could, and so they're quite alike, except for that one fact.
Oh, okay, so that... Okay. Okay, I think I'm almost done. Unless whether you'd like to add something, is there anything we should know? Not just me, but other people. It's for the radio.
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay. What about you? Anything? Okay.
We get to some of the room talk.
Room talk. Okay. Thank you so much. That was great. I'm very impressed. That was just, she's genius. So smart.
Well, we get to sit here for just a minute or two, and we just get the sound of the room, because sometimes if we have to edit things from one part to another, it's important to put that in. So. Slate, this is Room Tone from Yingying's house, where we did the interview, and this will be approximately a minute and a half. It seemed like forever, but here it goes.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes, you know, it's in the evenings I wasn't able to. Do you, like, I talked to Korean adoptees, adult adoptees, and it seems like they had some hard time because they are, like, isolated. They didn't have lots of Asian, you know, people around them. They didn't know any other adoptees, so they thought they are the only one. And But I don't know. It's like you are in San Francisco, and now the situation is much better. So maybe, so I'm just curious. Is everything okay, or do you feel kind of some kind of you know, some strange situation like that?
Everything feels the same as it normally would, but the Korean adoptees, they didn't have other adoptees ahead of them. I think they were the first ones. And then once they grew up, and other adoptees would come and they would look up to them. And so they were the first ones, and so they had to face the first problems. And they didn't exactly live in a town like San Francisco, because they lived in a town that was mostly white, and they didn't have any Asian faces or other colored faces, because it was because that's just where they lived.
Right, but what about you? Is everything is different here? Everything's good?
Yeah, because if you go to Chinatown, or if you just step outside, no one will look at you because you're Asian, or if you're a different color than white people, because it's so normal in San Francisco to be different.
And also, even when you are with your parents who are white and you are Chinese, people, it's okay.
Yeah, no one really looks.
That's great. That's how it should be, right? Yeah. So do you, when you go to Chinatown, do you speak to Chinese American, Chinese people in Chinese? Do you interact with the Chinese people?
No, not really, because they can understand English. So if I want to buy something, I just say it in English, because if I don't know one word, they might say, what? And I don't want to do that. And so they just speak in English.
So do you interact with the Chinese Americans in America?
Yes, like my godfather. Well, we're gonna celebrate Chinese New Year soon, and that's one way. And I think there are other ways, but I just don't remember them right now.
So for you, it's everything is nice and easy between, you know, just American culture and American society, and also Chinese Americans communities and their culture and society. You can just go back and forth, and you have friends and in both the communities. Is it right?
Yeah, I have friends in both Chinese American and Chinese and American communities.
Well, you're lucky. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, okay. I'm so sorry. I don't want to ask too many questions. Thank you so much. Unless you would like to say anything, I think I'm really done. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much, Yanyan. You're so sweet. Okay, time to drink a tea. Okay. Let's end that. It makes you thirsty, huh? Ah, looks like a really good tea. Thank you. Could you ask your parents?
Yeah.
Try as we might, ears pressed to the...
I thought you're listening to everything.
No.
Oh, no.
They're looking at summer ideas, so...
Right.
We were onto something else completely.
Maybe should I sit here? I don't need to be near them, right?
Yeah, okay.
They're going to have you come over this way.
Okay.
Okay.
So I can catch you with both.
Oh, right.
Sure.
Okay.
The human mic stands.
Okay.
Sorry, Mike. I still brought this
okay
mic.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
We'll try not to squeak too much on it.
Thank you, yeah.
This is not
Naga
hide.
Yeah, please try not to move on, make noise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll try.
Are you ready? Okay. Could you introduce yourself, starting from Amy?
I'm Amy Klatskin.
And I'm Terry Fry.
And what's your relationship with the Yin-Yin?
Oh, we're her parents.
We're her parents.
Well, people do not know.
Yeah, this is, yes.
So can you start again?
Sure. I'm Amy Klatskin, and I'm Yin-Yin's mom.
And I'm Terry Fry, Ying's dad.
Thank you. And
sure.
Ooh, well, we traveled to China on 10 days' notice during a time when the process for adoption was not very settled, so we didn't actually know whether it was going to work out. It was 1993, the end of 1993, and it was very early in the program. It was quite unsettled. And all we knew about her was her orphanage name, which was Zhousheng. And her head circumference and her weight, and that was it. We hadn't even seen a photograph. And we ended up, we adopted her the day before we met her. We did all of the paperwork in China and all the notary things before we saw her. And then the next day, we went to the orphanage, and she was brought to us in a very cold room after a long, long wait, and it was great. She just made eye contact right away, and we fell in love with her completely.
Well, particularly the last part of it is the most memorable, meeting her for the first time and just falling in love instantly. It was just terrific.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Well, we had gone through quite a few miscarriages and decided that what we really wanted was a child, not a pregnancy. We wanted a baby. Actually, we wanted to get through the baby to the child part because we didn't think the baby part was going to be very easy. It turned out to be a lot of fun. But when we made the choice to that we would adopt and that it was possible to adopt, we started working on a domestic adoption. And though it was scary, we did understand that there were positive things to having a relationship with at least the birth mother, and that it was scary, but it did make a lot of sense of why that would be a good thing to be able to have a history and everything else. And then, about a month after we started that process, we went to a conference. I guess Terry went to a conference and heard that China was now open for international adoption. And we had lived and worked in China in the 1980s for a couple of years right after we got married. And we thought, oh my goodness, this is incredible. We knew that the orphanages were rather crowded at the time, but China's rules were quite clear initially that they wanted ethnic Chinese people to adopt, or that you could make a special, have someone write for you and claim a special relationship to China. And we felt that we could have done that when we first heard about it, but we didn't feel very comfortable about doing that because it was clear that China much preferred same-race placement, and we thought that was a good idea as well. But as we learned more about the situation in early 1993, because the laws in China made it very, very difficult to place a baby in China at that time, once that child was in an orphanage, China changed the rules to allow international adoptions of orphanage babies in a very small number of orphanages. And we felt pretty okay about that because we weren't part of the process of a child losing a family. That had already been done. And the one-child policy at that time also applied to adoption. So families that had one child in the cities or one or two children in the countryside were prohibited from adopting, as it was treated as if they would have an extra birth that they weren't allowed to have. So it was really the kids who ended up in the orphanages who were really stuck at that time. We had a lot of support from friends in China, from our Chinese teacher in particular, Chinese friends in Hong Kong and Chinese American friends here were very, very supportive. So we felt we had a community to help raise our child. And living in San Francisco, we felt that we could bring her to a place where she would be in the majority in our neighborhood, and in schools and things. And we felt if we were going to adopt transracially that we wanted to be in the minority where we lived and where she went to school, and we felt we could do that.
I think the part of wanting to honor her culture was really important to us. It was clear to us that making a family was good for us. We didn't really understand before we started talking to a lot of people what it would be like for her. And the people that we talked to in China and the local Chinese-American community gave us their perspectives about what they thought. How would the local communities accept her and accept us as a family? And that was a really important thing, because we knew that she would have to deal with that for the rest of her life. And that's something that we couldn't understand growing up white in this country, but knew that that was something that would be important in her life and an important consideration in our making our family in that way.
So what is it like to arrange your...
It's a joy to raise her. She's a great kid, and we've got just a wonderful community of friends around us who take a lot of active interest in the many parts of her life. I'm having fun with a lot of the parts of being an adoptive parent, not living vicariously through a kid, which I think perhaps some biological parents are prone to do, but just seeing who she is for what she wants to do and who she wants to be, and seeing the joy that she takes in a lot of the things she does. It's really fun.
I'm sure this is true of raising all children, but somehow when it's an adopted child that's not related to you, it's even more of a mystery. It's like watching a blossom open, and you have no idea what colors are going to be inside, and you don't have... you know, the whole world is open for what she could become and what she could choose to be and what's innate to who she is. And I think that's quite fascinating. We do talk a lot about traits that we see in her that we know didn't come from us, you know. That's all the indication we have of her birth family and her ancestors are what is innate to her. And it's a tremendous mystery and also a tremendous loss, because they are real people and some of them are still alive. It's really sad that we don't know them and that she doesn't have any knowledge or connection with them, but they live in her to some extent. And so she's a tremendous athlete. She was born with that ability. And so we can wonder who among her birth parents or her ancestors had those abilities. Would they have ever had the chance to be an athlete? Or would they have been working in the fields and never have a chance to just run and run all day? You know, we don't have a lot of answers, but we have some hints that are quite extraordinary. And if that's all she ever has of her birth family and ancestry, that's not very much, but it is something. She does carry that forward. And perhaps at some point she'll be able to make connections, and perhaps not. We just don't know. But she's an extraordinary kid, and she's got great genes, and she's really been a wonderful child to have. It's been a real honor to raise her and to be part of her life in this way. And I like her so much. I mean, I love her, of course, but I like her so much. I would really love to meet her birth relatives. I mean, I just would just love to. But I don't know if that'll happen.
It seems like some adoptive parents just ignore about birth parents' part. And it seems like you're very open about it. And also, I think you try to help her to find the birth parents, right? Could you tell me a little bit about the process?
Right now, we have no traces. We have looked in her files. We have gotten all of her paperwork back from immigration service. And there's nothing. Her paperwork says that she was left with a note, which would probably but not necessarily have been from her birth mother. But we don't have that note. We've seen some, but we don't have hers. So really, there's no trace. And no one at her orphanage has any clues. And I believe that we know that to be true because we know some of these people quite well, and I think they would have told us. One in particular has retired, so she could tell us now, and she knows nothing. So what we do know is that there are television programs in China for finding lost relatives. We know what Korean adoptees are doing in Seoul and other parts of Korea, and our kids will learn from that. But we're not going to do that search for her. I think that takes over too much. I think what we hear, particularly from Korean adoptees, is how important it is to them to be in charge of the search. Everything else in adoption happened without their participation or consent. And search is really the first time that an adopted person gets any say at all over what happens in the adoption story. So I think it's very, very important to have that be the adopted person's choice. Obviously, an 11-year-old has very mixed feelings. She has very mixed feelings. We would, if we had any clues, we would trace those clues up to the point of making a connection, but we would leave the final choice to connect up to her. I think that's what we've learned from talking to a lot of Korean adoptees. Otherwise, it's us taking over, and it's not, they're not our birth parents. They're not our relatives. And what I hear from people who have searched is that it's not all, it's not so easy. You know, I know of people who got a phone number and then kind of went back to the country they lived in the West and sat on that for a year and then went back to Korea and made that phone call. It's not necessarily something that the adoptee wants to do 1, 2, 3. And if parents take over, of course, you know, a 10, 11-year-old adoptee has no say. So we really don't want to take that away from her. But we would support her completely if she were sure. You know, whenever we go back to China every year, year and a half, 2 years, whatever, sometime in that period. And each time we're there, we ask her if she wants to go to the police station and look, see if they have any files on her, the police station that recorded her information when she was found. And so far, she hasn't wanted to do that. And she does know from some movies from China about these television programs. She's not ready to do that yet. And that's fine. I don't want to take that over. I think she has a lot of mixed feelings. But if she ever decides she wants to do it and she wants our help, she'll have it, you know. But we'll be her working for her then, you know.
Should I add anything? That's a pretty good summary of where the story is, as far as we know it. And it's giving her control over that part of her story and that part of her life is something that we both feel is really, really important. And she has the predictable ambivalence that adopted persons of, well, of virtually any age might have. It's a big thing and a scary thing to confront that loss and to go chasing after it.
What was the original impetus for it? Did it come up in conversations, or did it a book came out of it eventually?
Yes, well, yes, exactly. Well, she, I don't know if she talked about Diane Boucher-Leim's film, but that was really the beginning, and she saw some of Diane's film when it was just a 10-minute treatment, and was just fascinated with it. And so, yes, she did want to do something like that, although knowing that she didn't know any relatives in China, so she couldn't do that story. But she did want to...
I think she wanted to explore her story, to know more of
yes.
it, and to understand it more. And I think that's what comes out a lot in her book is... it's her story, and yet it's the story of tens of thousands of children like her.
Also with the orphanage children, I think at 7 and a half, when the photographs were taken, which was her first trip back to her orphanage, although she had seen some others, but she hadn't seen hers. I think it was a really powerful experience to be with the babies, but not an experience she could articulate very well. But she went over and over again to the room that had the babies that were the age that she was, 4 and a half months when she was adopted. And she would just stand and hold on to a crib, and she'd just, like a shadow would pass over her face. And she certainly couldn't have articulated it then. I don't know if she could now, but it was very powerful to be in a room of 34-month-olds who've lost their families and everything that they were born to. It's powerfully painful to someone like me, and I would never experience that. So I think on some level that was just a gut experience of connection and alienation at the same time, just overwhelming. And her biggest, you know, the easy parts were hanging out with the toddlers, because they were a lot of fun. They live totally in the present. And so they have a good time when they're in a good mood and they feel good and somebody's there to play. They have a great time. With the older kids, she was really fascinated with them. She saw their independence, their responsibility, their connection to one another. And she was very particular in the book when she was going over the typescript to make sure that nothing sounded like she felt sorry for them. She really, really admired them. And I think at 8 years old, she didn't have the ability to think, oh my goodness, they have no family to care for them. No, what she saw was this great group of kids who were a lot of fun to play with, who didn't have any parents telling them what to do. And that's very much her. That was very much her view of it. It's not our view of those kids. I mean, we look at those kids and they really are. I mean, some of them are just so, so charming and so appealing and such great kids. And it just hurts, you know. I mean, it's not a good thing to grow up without a family. It's not a good thing to have to raise yourself and have to care for other children with hardly any adults around to care for you, because they're too busy taking care of severely disabled kids and babies, and you can feed yourself, you know, so off you go. They really are not intentionally neglected, but they're really on their own. And that's an adult point of view, you know. That's not what she saw, and I still think she doesn't really see them that way. She sees them as just incredibly competent children, and she has a lot of admiration for them. And that was something she really wanted to get across, I think. Mm-hmm. And also the sense that China is not just an orphanage, that it's a place where there are lots of kids who do have families and live in their families, and that life in cities is pretty modern for a lot of kids and not alien. She wanted to make that connection, I think, that even though it's China and even though they speak Chinese, that their lives are a lot like her life, and that was an important point for her to make, I think.
And I talked to some other Korean adopted, or read some articles, and it seems like some adoptees don't care about their birth parents, and they are so happy about their adoptive parents, and, you know, I mean, it might be a really ridiculous question, but why is it so important for her to find
I don't know that she will decide to search. I suspect, my guess is she will search, because she's that kind of person. I mean, she's very, she thinks a lot about difficult things. And to confront parents who brought you into the world and chose not to raise you is confronting something very, very difficult and painful. My guess, if I had to guess, is that she will try to do that, but she may not. You know, that's a it's not for everybody. Not all adoptees do it. And choosing to do it doesn't mean you'll succeed. Doesn't mean you'll find anybody. Doesn't mean the reunion will be good. So there are lots of things that are difficult. I mean, for adoptive people who really, really, really want to meet their birth parents, if they search and don't find, just the fear that they might search and not find can keep them from searching in the first place, you know? So I think it's quite fraught. I'm not sure that she'll decide to do it. You know, it's not certain. But I think that whether she searches or not, it is our job as parents to not just adopt, but also embrace and make real the whole child that lives with us. And some of that person is what she was when she was born. She brought a genetic inheritance and a history of humanity on this earth that she represents. Even if we don't know what it was uprooted from, we can find traces of that. And that, I think, is very important for us to bring out when it shows up. Because otherwise, we're asking her to cut herself in little pieces. You know, we have a tremendous impact on her growing up in our family and growing up in this city and this country will have an enormous, enormous impact on her life. There's no question about that, but it doesn't account for 100%. And we adopted all of her, and we value all of her, not just the parts that we can influence, and we want to make clear that all of it's valuable.
That's great. Would you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think not knowing what her choices will be in the future, we've been careful to try to make all of those choices possible by constantly talking about her birth family as real people that still exist to our knowledge, not to set up the possibility of false choices that she would have to choose between the family that raised her and the family that gave birth to her. We're each important parts of her life, and I think for some adoptive children that becomes a difficult choice, but I think it's a false choice. And by making her birth family real in our conversation, the way that we talk about her herself, we hope that she doesn't have to make that choice out of fear for alienating us or for some other artificial reasons. And whether she chooses to search for them, whether she finds them and and chooses to have a relationship, those are things that she'll have control over with full knowledge that they are a part of her.
Also, I think it's very common for all children to some extent, but particularly adopted children, to try to protect us, the parents. You know, they don't want us to be upset by their secret thoughts. They don't want to hurt us. And it's not just that. I mean, these are kids who have actually lost a set of parents, and they know it, you know, by the time they're 6 or 7. They know it. They're not going to risk losing another set. So if they have even a kind of magical thinking that if they let mom and dad know they've been thinking about their birth mother, that somehow that would be disloyal, they're going to protect us from those, from knowing that, and just stuff it under. And it's too difficult to process that, those big, strong, helpless feelings all alone. So we don't talk actually constantly about it, but we do, you know, every few weeks when something provides the opportunity to put it on the table, is not just to say, yes, you know, this skill or this talent, you didn't get this from us, this came to you through your genetic inheritance, blah, 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 but also to be able to say, through that, we can deal with this. We can, you know, we can handle this. You don't have to hide this stuff from us, because really, it's so difficult for children to have to deal with such enormous loss on their own. And there's nothing bigger than losing your parents as a child. It's just, it's so big. And it doesn't matter whether they remember them or not. They know that, you know, by the time they're six or seven or sometimes younger, they know that they've lost the set of parents who brought them into the world, and they know enough about society to know that those are the people who are supposed to risk their lives for you. They're supposed to give up everything for you, and they didn't. That's very painful. And our job as parents is to be there for the good and the bad and the difficult and the happy and all of it. We get all the happy stuff. You know, we should also be there for the tough stuff. And they're, you know, the lot, that early experience was not a lucky one, you know, and it will affect all these kids to some degree in different ways, but to all of them forever. It's a life-changing thing, whether they remember or not. Which isn't to say I think they're all doomed to have a terrible life. They're not. I mean, all human beings have to deal with grief and loss. That's part of being human. What's different for adopted children is also different for children whose parents die when they're very young, and that is that they have to deal with these tremendous losses before they're old enough to, you know, to really understand what's happened. And it's hard enough to deal with losses of this kind when you're all grown up, you know. So they need us to be able to shoulder some of that burden while they're growing up.
And also I see both the Caucasian, and I don't know how much connection you had to with the Chinese cultures before you adopted her, but it seems like I see lots of Chinese stuff here, and so it seems like it must be love, you know, you are exposing yourselves to Chinese cultures, is that right? For her, or?
Well, we lived in China in a good 10 years before we adopted her. So a lot of this stuff we've had for a very long time. So we have our own relationship to China and our own place in China, but it was a different part of the country from where she came from. What we've done is adjust our connection. We haven't been back to the city where we lived for quite a few years now because we want to learn more about the part of the country she's from and also to help her establish connections and friendships, people that she sees over time and can build relationships with in the part of China that she came from. So yes, both really. But I think our interest in China would be there whether we had adopted her or not. And it will continue to be there even if she wants nothing to do with China or Chinese things, because that's part of our life too. So we have a separate and a collective interest.
No, it's just to reinforce just that. You know, that's we started out with a very firm connection to China, and it was that connection to China that tipped the balance for you know, the adoption plan that we had. When we heard that, you know, that adoptions were available in China to Caucasian parents, it just tied together a lot of parts of our lives, and it made it very easy for us to do that. So,
are you joking? Hmm? When I talk to some adult adoptees, it seems like they, you know, sometimes their parents ask them to go to like a, you know, like Chinese cultural event or meet like Vietnamese, you know, people. But sometimes they withdraw because, you know, they are the only one. They don't want to be different from their family. But it seems like Yin Yang is quite just content, and it's very easy, you know, balancing between, you know, mainstream American society and culture and the Chinese culture. Is that right? Or?
I think it's a lot to do with where she lives, because this is a multicultural city, and we live in a Chinese, largely Chinese neighborhood, at least for families. The kids around here are Chinese American. Most of them speak Chinese at home, some dialect, they're all different dialects, and English with, you know, out in the world. And also the school that she's been in since she was three. She's been at a bilingual school, Chinese American International School. And I think one of the things that's most wonderful about that school is that it's not all Chinese kids there. It's, you know, it's quite a good mixture. There are a lot of biracial kids, and their third of the school is not Asian at all. They all speak Chinese. They all spend half their day studying in Chinese, all their subjects. And so it's not just a special torture for people with a Chinese heritage. It's a world language, like French or Spanish. You know, it's a language that any child can learn and study the whole world in. So it normalizes it in a way that is difficult in, if you only go to after-school Chinese programs or whatever. We've been very, very lucky to have that. And she's also then has a cohort of kids, some of whom are Chinese and some of whom are not, who all have the same experience. And I think that's been a tremendous grounding for her. You know, that she's grown up with the Chinese children's stories, and it's a piece of childhood that came along with her American childhood and that was delivered to her by a community of Chinese people who'd grown up in Taiwan or on the mainland and come to America and now live as Chinese people here. So I think she really has had a huge, it's had a very, very big impact. What it'll be like later when she goes out into the world and not everybody speaks Chinese, you know, it'll be interesting to see. But I hope that it's given her a really solid foundation of being Chinese in this country and trying to make that work.